Well, I'm so happy to be here this morning. I came back from Liberia about, 3 weeks ago, maybe, and I've been in the South, specifically in Louisiana and Texas, hanging out with the Cajuns a little bit, you know, and then flew out here 2 days ago. But I bring you special greetings from Liberia, from the children, the people over there, who asked me a lot of questions about you, but I don't know what to say, so I'm back. You know, they're doing great. It's different. You know, just that when I come here, you ask me questions about, how are the kids doing? You know, how are the schools? You know, how is this and how is that? The same thing when I go over there, they ask me the same question. How do these Americans live? You know, where do they go shopping? Where do they sleep? How do they eat? What do they eat? So it constantly, it doesn't stop. You know, yesterday I had a privilege to chat with Pastor Don a little bit online, and he said I should extend his greetings to you this morning, that he's praying for you, praying for the church, that we will have a great and wonderful service this morning to the glory of God. Also, I met with Pastor Seth. That's his name, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday. We had lunch together somewhere around Lady Lake. Wonderful man. We had a long time talking. He's been walking with the Lord for a very long time. And a lot of stories. So I'm excited about what's about to happen here, about the churches coming together, all to the glory of God. And I'm going to be here. I thought it was happening soon. He said, well, July, out of July 1st and July 7th, is when the official launch is going to be. So I got to put down my schedule down and make sure I'm back here, you know, wherever I am in the country. I got to be here on that day. So we are excited and looking forward to what God is doing. And thank you so much for being there, for allowing God to use you, to speak to you. It is always a privilege when God calls you, when you are invited to tag along with what He's doing in the world. It could be right here in your backyard, it could be at home in your family, it could be in a foreign nation, but it is a privilege. It's never a burden. It's a privilege, you know, to do that. And today, if I want to talk to you, I'll talk to you about finishing well. How do you start something and finish it well? You know, most of us start things and we don't finish it well. We start life, we don't finish it well. A lot of things we start, it looks great from the beginning, and then at the end or somewhere halfway in the middle, we don't even know what we're doing. Sometimes we're not even sure about what we started and why we even started in the first place. So today we're going to talk about that. And two scriptures we're going to talk about, actually three. The first one, if somebody can read for me, we're going to go to Galatians 6:7. Can somebody read that, please? Galatians 6:7, and the other one is Ephesians 6:7 as well. But this one I'm going to read. And Jesus said unto them, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all that heart, with all that soul, and with all that mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second, like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbors as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the other laws. Can somebody else help me with the other one? Galatians 6:7. You got it? You don't
have
it?
Nope. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows.
Be not deceived. God cannot be mocked. That means God cannot be deceived. Whatever you sow, so shall you reap. It's reciprocal. We call it a lot of reciprocation. It's give and take. It's a two-way street. It's not one way. It's two-way. It goes like that. You know? So if you don't put in, you can't get out. Love is a seed. If you don't plant it, you're not going to harvest the fruit thereof. Forgiveness is a seed that must be planted first before you harvest the result. Of being forgiven yourself. You cannot refuse to forgive other people and expect God to forgive you. It's a seed. You must first plant that seed. When I smile at you, naturally you're going to smile back at me, right? Even if you don't smile back, I just got to keep smiling, and at some point you're going to smile. At some point you're going to smile, right? So love is a seed, and all the things that the life we live is a seed that has been planted. It must grow. The purpose is, the question is, what's the purpose of that? The Bible says, as long as the earth remains, seed time and harvest time shall never end, which means to say that every day we're going to grow stuff, we're going to harvest, we're going to live our life. You breathe in, you must breathe out. If you don't breathe out, what's going to happen to you?
Blow up.
You're going to blow up. right? So you take in air, you give out what? Oxygen. That's just law. It doesn't matter whether you go to church, you don't go to church, it doesn't matter whether you know Jesus, you don't know Jesus. It's a law that must happen. When the rain falls and gives water to the ground so that we can be able to grow our food and have food on the table to eat, it's a law. It's not just there. So we have been called to be a channel, true ways to bless his flow. It's not to sink within. It's not to clog the pipe. It's to keep it flowing in and out. And that's the message that I have. I'm going to share a little bit of my story, but that is the foundation of what I want to talk about. You've been called to be a channel. If you want to finish well, you got to look at yourself as a pipe. It's not a reservoir. It's not a storage. It's a pipe through which the blessings flow. And what you make happen for others, God makes happen for you. It's a seed. Amen?
Amen.
So God has given us this marvelous opportunity to decide what we want, how we want to live our lives, how we want to finish this life that we started. Whatever we're going to live to be, 70, 80, 90, 100, whatever years, is very short compared to eternity. And all that time here on the face of the earth, we are investing and investing and investing. What are we investing into? And what's the purpose of the investment? What's the meaning of this life? Him. I'll share a short story with you. There was this American tourist that went to Mexico on a mission trip. And he was bored. He got there. Nothing much is happening. You know, there's no fun, no party, nothing happening in the place. And he saw this Mexican going fishing, you know, and he met one of them. He said, what do you guys do out here? Your life is so boring. I mean, you go fishing, and what do you do with the fish? The guy said, oh, great. We take the fish home and we eat. And he said, okay, so you go home. How do you do that? He said, well, we come to the river, we fish in the morning, we catch some fish, we go home, and we cook the fish, and we come together as a family in the evening hours. We light a big fire, and we eat our fish, and then we get drunk, and we have parties. And he said, then what do you do after that? He said, then we go to bed. He said, then what do you do when you wake up the next day? He said, we come back again to the river. And he said, what do you do? He said, we catch some more fish. And then what do you do? He said, we go back and have the same party. The guy said, oh, that's so boring. That's so short. I have a great idea. I am an American. I can help you make a good business out of this. He said, well, what's the idea? He said, no, the next time you catch the fish, don't eat it. I said, okay, so what do I do with it? He said, well, you sell it. He said, then when I sell it, what do I do with the proceeds? He said, well, you try to buy yourself a boat. He said, okay, so when I buy the boat, what do I do with the boat? He said, then the boat will help you catch more fish. He said, okay, so when I catch more fish, what do I do with the more fish? He said, then, you know, you sell it again, and you have a new market in New York and the United States and all over the world, and you export the fish, and other people buy the fish. And the guy said, okay, then what do you do after that? He said, then you're going to make a lot more money. He said, then what do you do with a lot more money? He said, now, this is the point. You establish a big business, high-tech business, just specializing in fish, catching, and sales. I said, okay, so when that happened, what do I do? He said, then you're going to get rich. He said, okay, when you get rich, then what do I do? What's next? He said, then you're going to buy yourself a private plane. So, okay, so what do I do with a private plane? He said, well, you're going to travel all over the world, and then you're going to get married, you're going to have kids, and you live in a big house, a big, beautiful house, and you're going to have some beautiful cars to drive. And the guy said, then what? And he said, you're going to leave this little town and move to the big city. Hollywood, somewhere, and enjoy your life. And the guy said, then what? He said, well, you're going to start getting old. He said, then when I get old, what happened? He said, then you have to think about retirement. And the guy said, okay, when I retire, what do I do? He said, you know, you and your wife are going to move back here, by the bayou, you're going to build a house right here, and you're going to sit here and wait for the day you're going to die. The guy said, why do you want to take me all around the world just to do what we are already doing right now? This is what we do. We sit here. And that's how short life is. So this morning is about how do we start well and finish well. It's important. There's more to life than just the things we do every day, the fighting, the confusion. I I mean, it's so crazy now. You turn on the radio, television, even Liberia is crazy. You don't even know what's going on. It's become a total mess. It's a displacement of priorities. So this morning, like me, I was born in Liberia, Africa. Some of you have heard my story, but those of you who have not heard, I'll just give you a quick rundown of it. I was born in Liberia, and I never chose it. God, all of us in this room, have a plan for each and every one of us. We never chose to be born where we were born, never chose to be born in the family in which we were born. We never chose our mom, our dads, our uncles, our nephews. We never chose the country in which we should be born, the government under which we should be born, the environment we were born in. We never chose the circumstances surrounding our birth. God designed it all. And in my case, I never chose Liberia. And he did not consult with me about it. We didn't have a meeting and say, hey, Eric, let's talk about this. I want to know how you feel about it. Tell me, do you feel good? I'd like to place you in the country, Liberia, this third poorest country, no electricity, no running water, no education, no health care. There's Ebola out there, and there's civil war going to take place, and you're going to be a refugee, and you're not going to be able to see your parents for 20 years, and you're going to come to America as a refugee, and it's going to be tough. So I want you to decide if that's what you want. There's no consultation. God is not a Democrat. He doesn't consult people. But the Bible says that I know the thoughts that I have towards you. That's God speaking. That thought of good, not of evil. It's to give you a future and an expected end. Which means to say that it's not what we want, it's all about what he wants, what he's up to. We are all characters in his book. The story you are living out today is not your story. My story is not mine. I'm just a character in God's book. I think. And you got to understand it that way. If you want to finish well, you got to know your role. You're a character. You're not the owner of the story. You just acted. So we all never choose to be born. So I never choose to be born in Liberia. I was born into a family that never went to school. There was no education. We ate one meal a day on the day that we were lucky. And we ate around 8 p.m. at night. Mom and dad had to wake us up. It's time to eat. This is 8 o'clock. And we ate one bowl. There was no, forks and knives and spoons and utensils on the table. Just one bowl. They put all the family food. All the kids ate one bowl. Mom and dad ate one bowl. Uncles and nephews one bowl. So it's just one bowl. And there was not enough food for everybody to have their own share. I never chose that. There was no electricity. We live in a little hut with thatched roof, no windows, no doors, dirt floor. There's no dining room tables, no kitchen area. The kitchen is outside, restroom's outside. When you go into the house, you're going in to sleep, and then you come out and do everything else outside. That's it. It's not like here in America. It's not like here in America where we go in and we have the kitchen in. There's a food pantry in there. We have the laundry room in there. We got everything in there. No, it's not like that. But I never chose that, which God had asked me to choose. I didn't choose that. As kids growing up, we had to help our parents on the farm. We had to walk 6-7 hours a day one way to get to the farm to work. We spent the whole day walking. We get to the farm, we work all day, we plant sweet potatoes, cassava, we pepper, onions, and then we come back home and we eat. There's no education. We couldn't dream about what you want to be when you grow up. You want to be a lawyer, a doctor, you want to be a senator, president. There's no dream. But God knew what he was doing through all of that. For me, that was life. That was the happiest moment in my life because my mom was at home, dad was at home, everybody was at home. So we come home and we have this big fire, we sit there, we share stories, and we tell stories, and we laugh, and then we get information. Our information, there was no media at the time, so we get information from the gathering of people around the fire at night. That was life until 1989. In 1989, the Liberian Civil War started. This was a war I did not declare. A war I had no idea what was happening in the country. And the war started. Before we knew what was happening, everything in the country has been destroyed. There's no food, no water, no electricity, nothing. There's no government. It's total breakdown of law and order. No structure. The person with a gun is the man in charge of your life for the day. And there's no food. And there's curfew in the country. You can't come out from 6 to 6 or dusk to dawn. You have to stay in your house. You can't come out. I guess I was around the age of 12. And the reason is that I don't have a birth certificate. I wasn't born in the hospital. And in Africa, honestly, we don't pay attention to date of birth. So when I came here, I was shocked. Part of my culture shock in America was how important birthdays are. You get in trouble, you don't call to say happy birthday, you are in trouble. You're in serious trouble. And I got Eric into trouble all the time. You know, oh, Eric, my birthday was yesterday. I'm so sorry. I don't even remember mine, sorry. You know, in Africa, we don't remember that, right?
That's why we made Facebook.
You know, so Facebook trying to remind you, they do a good job with that. You know, I'm still trying to learn, you know, to adapt. But it's been difficult. So I don't know my date of birth. There's no birth certificate. I was going to the hospital. My mom gave birth to me on the way to the farm. To midwifery. That's it. And my mom and I never talked about it. Until lately, maybe 3 years, 4 years ago. When I asked her, Mom, when do you think I was born? And she goes, well, you know, that was when the village had not gotten burned. What year was that? You know, that year we had drought, there was fire, burned our farm. It could be 1940, it could be 1960, it could be any year. It shouldn't even care much about it. So that's how I was born. So 1989, I guess I was around the age of 12, and there was no food. People were dying. And I started to learn a lot, even though I was young. I was in a Christian, my parents were never Christian. We're not born in a Christian home. Christianity was brought to Africa by Americans, you know, and Irish, and Scots, and English people brought Christianity to Africa. So we didn't know what was happening. My mother and my parents, they practiced African voodoo, which is a mixture of voodoo and juju, African religion. That's what we did. They worshiped dead animals and dead people. They went to the cemetery at night and invoked spirits. That's what they did. But I didn't know there's no curriculum for that. There's no written text to know what to follow. Thank God for Jesus. The Bible has been written. You got it. And that was given to you through education. That's how important it is. So, we didn't know anything. And there was no food. There were people that had money in the bank. The money was worthless to them. They couldn't buy anything with the money. There's war in the country. There's no goods, no food, no water. You can't buy anything, but you got money filled up in this room. But it's worthless. There are people with cars. The cars couldn't move because there's no gasoline to power the cars. And in 1 year, everybody in the country came to a level playing field. You couldn't tell the difference between the rich and the poor. Those that have and those that have nothing. And my mom said, Eric, we need you to go out there and go fishing, get us some fish to eat, or else we all going to die in the house. And I was the oldest. And I did fishing. That's what I did as a kid growing up. That's my number one job in the home. We went fishing. So I went out there to go fishing. Took me 2 days. We caught some fish. On my way back home, I was captured by rebel fighters to be turned into a soldier to fight. When I refused to join, I was tied up, tortured, beaten, and left to die. Miraculously, God saved my life. I left Liberia at the age of 12, never went back home to see my parents from that fishing trip. And for the next 20 years, I was on the run. I crossed Liberia, the border into Ivory Coast, a French-speaking country. I don't speak French, we speak English. And I'm in a French-speaking country, I don't understand the language, I don't understand the culture, I don't understand the people. There are a lot of barriers. And I went on for the next 14 years. I traveled to over 10 different refugee camps in 10 different nations. None of these I chose until I arrived in Nigeria. But God was still in control of everything. We have to wait for food to be brought to us in the refugee camp to eat, water to drink. We live on the mercy of others. And in the camp, I started to wrestle with myself. What is this all about? What's the meaning of life? What's the meaning? And for the first time, I started to experience true love. Because in that camp, there was no mom, no dad, no uncle, no nephew, no government. So guess what? It only took people who love you to look after you. And most of the people that helped me out were not family members, were not citizens of Liberia. These were non-Liberians, most time non-Africans, people who loved Jesus, were the ones who came to the camp. When we were in the refugee camp, the best time to be in the camp was Christmas month, December. Because that's the month that we have the Catholics, the Baptists, the Lutheran, all the denominations came over with food for the refugees. And like we used to joke, we said, Christ has come for 2 weeks and he's gone and the Christ is back. So they come with food, with shelter, I mean with colis, and we wouldn't wait. We wish Christmas was every day. That was his son. They come and they go. They come and they go. So in those refugee camps, those problems. But why all these problems? Why didn't God tell me about this? Why didn't he give me a heads up? You know, this is what's going to happen. I want you to prepare yourself for this. But no heads up. The problem is Liberia. Liberia is a small country in West Africa. It's Africa's oldest independent and democratic nation. It was founded about 200 years ago. In 1820, the U.S. Congress bought Liberia for $100,000 to be used to resettle free American slaves that went back to Africa from the U.S., from New York specifically. They arrived in this new country called Liberia. Liberia comes from the word liberty, the land of the free. That's the only country they would tell you most people think is America's stepchild. If you look at the flag, it's a full copy of that of the U.S. flag, red, white, and blue, one scrap, made one star, representing one state. The Constitution was written here. The pledge is the same thing. The same pledge you got is the same pledge you got over there. But big problems. There's no running water nationwide, no electricity nationwide, almost 200 years later. Still waiting. Education. One out of four Liberian children can read and write. One out of four. 60% have never been in any classroom of education at all. Minimum wage is $100 a month. Police and nurses, teachers make $100 a month. Think about that one woman, $100 a month. In Liberia, the unemployment rate right now is around 85% unemployment. In America, I remember 2-3 years ago, it was 10%, and the whole country was about to go to civil war. It's 85% in Liberia. It's the third poorest country right now as I speak to you. So that's the problem. Now, what's the solution? For me, the solution is education. Christian education. Our children stand no chance without education. They stand no chance without education. In America, you have had free education for over 200 years. At high school level, from first grade all the way to grade 12. 200 years. You have a very educated public that make informed decisions. Even God himself knew the importance of education so much so that he appointed wise men to sit and write, to document his will and his plan, his purpose for our lives, that today we can read the Bible. You want to know anything about God? You're going to read the Bible. And all that is done through education. How do you read the Bible when you cannot read nor write? So for me, it's education. How do we break this cycle? How do we change this story? It's education. How do we finish this story well? It started terrible, but can we have a good finishing? Mm-hmm. Education, Christian education is the way to go. And that cannot be done without the foundation of Christ being built first in the schools. So I came to America in 2006. The U.S. government showed up in the refugee camp and they said, we are here, we care about you guys. You're right. We've been, how many years we've been waiting? He said, we want to help. And then President George W. Bush was president here. And we didn't know what to believe. We heard so much promises. We heard so many things. We didn't believe these people. So now we came to help some of you go to America. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah. But finally, we got on the plane. It was a culture shock. Before I got on the plane that day, the immigration officer brought a piece of paper and said, Eric, you got to sign here. This is a promissory note that you will pay back $3,000 to the Catholic Bishop's Appeal Services for your travel expenses. And I looked at the paper, $3,000, and I quickly took my calculator, I did my math, it was around 1.5 million African money. I'm like, we're not going, sorry. This is too much money to owe. We don't borrow anything, we don't, nobody credit us anything. I had not even gone, I'm owing you 1.5 million. I'm not going to survive this, we can't go. This is a trap, it's a trick. It's going to trick us to this. And I started to incite all my colleagues. And the lady got upset with me. She said, what are you doing? I said, well, this is crazy. I owe you 1.5 million already and I haven't left. And she said, well, Eric, you don't understand this. I said, well, of course I don't understand. You got to help me understand it. And she said, look, this is your first line of credit. First line of credit? What does that mean? What would be the second line? And this is the first line. This is the third line. What's the first line? She said, look, listen, when you get to America, it's going to be easy for you. You're going to be able to repay this money in no time. It's $3,000 and you have 5 years to repay. I said, it doesn't matter. It can be 10 years. This is 1.5 million we're talking about. So I'm not going. And she said, look, just get on the plane. Forget it. You don't pay. That's it. Just go. So we got on the plane. And I sit on the plane like an alien. I'm all normal people. Everybody else is drinking the wine. Some people are eating. Some people listen to music on their computer. It's peaceful. It's quiet. It's calm. And people just mind their own business. Nobody's talking to anybody. Just take care of themselves. And I'm sitting there thinking, who are these people? You know how America calls people weird? It's so weird. So I'm looking around. I'm like, I'm the alien on the plane, or all these people are aliens. And during the flight attendant comes over to me and said, what are you going to eat? I said, I don't want to eat. I didn't sign that paper. I'm not going to eat. And we never ate throughout the duration of the flight till we got to Frankfurt, Germany, August 28, 2006. We got on the plane. I didn't have a passport, no ID card, no address. You don't know where you're going, who you're going to, why you're even going to the place. We just follow it. Talk about faith and hope. People who don't believe in God, but they believe in hope, they still got a problem. Hope is the same as faith. You can't prove it. And we're just going. It's going to be okay. Just keep following. And we reach in Frankfurt. And I'm standing in that massive airport in Frankfurt. And don't know where to go. All these people just going like this, going like that. Where are all these people going? They need to stop. And I'm standing there, and this strange lady walked up to me. I've never met her in my life. And she goes, Mr. Eric, welcome to Germany. And I'm like, how do you know me? I've never met you before. She said, you have the bag you have in your hand. I had a bag in my hand. She said, that bag, I identify you as one of my clients. This is a bag they give us before we left from Africa. Almost like this. Can I use this? Uh-huh. Almost like the size of this bag. And they said, hold this bag. Don't open it, don't squeeze it, don't hide it. Hold it open for everybody else to see what you carry in the airport. So we on the airport, we do like this, we're walking around. And she walks up and says, hey, Eric, you're one of my clients. I'm like, how? She said, the bag you have. Come with me, and you're going to stay with me for the next 4 or 5 hours. And I'm going to give you some food to eat, and we will connect you to your final flight to the USA. You have not started your journey yet. You got like 8-9 hours to go. What? 8 or 9 hours? We've just done 6. She said yes. And I followed this woman, total stranger. Talk about God being in control and ordering your steps. Not your own steps, but He ordered your steps. And we arrived in Chicago Airport, another crazy airport. Everybody going like that again. And I stood up there, and the immigration guys come over and say, hey, can I have the bag? I gave him the bag. He said, follow me. And I followed him. He gave me a seat. He said, you got to sit down here and be very patient. It's going to take some time to do your paperwork. I don't know which kind of paperwork he's talking about. And he took the bag away from me. Till today, I don't know what was in that bag. Till today. Don't know. And he comes out a few hours later, and he said, we're going to do your fingerprints. He goes, I didn't know what he was doing. I'm just standing there trying to absorb everything and just trying to understand where I am. It's that the world has flipped over in less than 24 hours. And he processed everything, and he said, I'm going to see you on your way to your final destination. That's going to be L.A. I didn't know L.A. was Louisiana. I thought it was Los Angeles. And then he put me on the flight to Houston to Lafayette. When I arrived in Lafayette, Louisiana, this is in 2006. I'm now in America. No passport, no ID. I got off the plane. Another strange lady standing outside the airport waiting for me. And I walk in. She said, "You must be Eric." I said, "Sure, I am." She said, "Come with me. I'm going to be your kiss wiper." Kiss wiper in Africa is a negative term. Kiss wiper? I'm not committing a crime. I can't go to court. I'm sorry. I didn't sign that paper, so I don't do that kiss wiper. And she said, "No, that's not what I'm talking about. The government have hired me to work with you in the Catholic Church for 6 months to help you get adjusted to your new country, and then to teach you how to drive and a lot of things I want to be doing with you." I said, "Okay, that's understandable." So we got in the car. As we drove, I looked through the windows of the car. There was nobody in the street, just like the villages around here. Nobody walking in the street. Everybody driving. So I looked. Who are these people? They drive with every single one. So I asked the lady, "Where are the people in this town? I don't see nobody in the street." In Africa, we walk everywhere. We commute everywhere. We ask questions, a lot of questions. And she said, "Oh, look at them. They are driving cars." "Oh, hold on. All of you, your kids drive cars, uncles drive cars, grandma drive cars, grandpa drive cars. Everybody drives cars here." "So yeah, Eric, if you don't have a car, you're not going to survive." I said, "Oh, so why did you bring me here? I'm never going to survive. I can't drive. I'm never going to order a car. Why did you bring me here?" "He just brought me here to make my life more miserable. I can't do this." And she said, "Look, go down. You just get in here. Everything is going to be just fine." And then I said, "Okay, if you all drive cars around, how do you know where you are headed? Who gives who direction?" In Africa, we ask questions. I come to you and say, "Hey, Josh, I want to go to the village." And you say, "Okay, Eric, you go out, take left. There's a big old tree. Go behind that tree. You see a big old brown building there. Go behind that building and keep going down, and you're going to take another right." That's how we do it. And she said, "Oh, there's something we call GPS. I just got off the plane from Africa. GPS? What is GPS? What do you do with that?" She said, "Oh, it's a little computer device that we communicate with that help us to navigate." "So you don't even talk to nobody? You just depend on computers?" She said, "Yeah, that's what we do. I'm trying to exalt that." And then we arrived into my apartment, the first apartment at the University of Louisiana. And it took a one-bedroom apartment, right? I walk into that apartment, Josh, it's crazy. I'm standing there, and this is around 10 o'clock at night. I'm still processing what's going on here. And we walk in there, the lights are so bright. There was a big king-size mattress in there, and with 10 or 11 pillows on the bed. And she comes to me, and she said, "Hey, this is your bed to sleep on." I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I've never slept on a bed like that before. My family, my whole generation, never had a bed like that. So I'm processing that, and she said, and I look at the bed, and I'm like, "What am I going to do with 10 pillows? I can't handle one, and you have 10 on one bed." And she said, "I'm going to show you a couple of things tonight before I go home." I said, "Great." We come to the kitchen, she opens this double door fridge. And she opens it, there's chicken, butter, bean, bread, all kinds of stuff in there from the bottom all the way to the top is filled. And she said, "This is your food for you to eat? You too skinny? I want you to put on some weight, you know, and next week, I'm going to come replenish." "You're going to come replenish? You mean you're going to bring new box?" She said, "Yes." And I'm thinking, "Can you ship all these food back to Liberia? Because you're going to bring more next week?" That's the first thought that came to my mind. And then she said, "Microwave." She brought me to the kitchen. There's a microwave sitting there. I've never seen a microwave in my life. I don't know what to do with it. And it said, she said to me, "This is what Americans use to cook and heat up their food." And I look at this box. I'm like, "This is a box. There's no fire in it." Because my concept of fire is wood, heat, and smoke. There's nothing there. And she said, "Oh, it uses electricity." I said, "Okay, that's good." Last thing that blew me away was, she said, "I need to show you the temperature control." "So what does that mean?" She said, "Oh, when it's too hot, you know, you can adjust it. When it's too cold, you can adjust it." "What? That's what you guys do here? You adjust everything? So you know what you're going to do? You know what happened? If it's very nice meeting you, good night. I got to go to bed. Because where I come from, when it's hot, it is hot. And there's nothing you can do about it to adjust everything. So go home." And right that night, I prayed to God. I said, Lord, help me to understand the purpose of this trip. What am I doing here? There's so much to handle. There's so much attachment, so much bombardment of so much stuff. Distractions all over the place. Tell me, why am I here? Why was I picked out of all those refugees and brought here? For what reason? And that led to the Change Agent Network organization today that I run. But God, I became a Christian in a refugee camp, not in the States. The best place to be a Christian, I must tell you this morning, is in America. That's the best place to be. We come here, there's coffee in the lobby, there's free donuts, you can have snacks. There's gifts on the table in the background there. You want a Bible, you get a free Bible. We come here, just look at the screen, just look at what's in the background. And the AC is on. And we wash it and we all drive a car. Isn't God good? We park our cars, and then nobody's worried about how they're going to eat this afternoon when they get home. Nobody's worried about anything. We got money in the bank. We got work to do. We got family. Your 911 number still works. Even here, the choices are just too much. You don't believe it? Just go to the restaurant. They give you a menu with 30 plus items. You get confused just trying to decide what you want. You go to Walmart right now, to any mall around here, they're going to be 3 hours of chips. Just chips. Bullet chips. 3 hours. And you're going to go left or right. You don't even know what you want to be. And the judge just go out and eat. And Jack says, I don't know what you want. I don't know. What you want? I don't know. Now we're going to have a fight. We're going to have a fight because we can't decide what we want. It's just too much. And that's the country you were born in. There's nothing sacred about it. You don't have to be guilty about it. You just to be aware that this is different. You ask for a sweetener, they say they got coffee, there's decaf, there's medium roast, dark roast, there's regular. They give you choices again. You just want to cook and you touch the machine, you touch a cup, and they give you 50 different cooks, choices. You don't like this church, you can go to another church. You don't like the way you go to the other one. Choices is too much. But I have come this morning to tell you that that is not the way 7 billion people in the world live. You've been so blessed to be an American. So blessed to be born where you were born, where God planted you from the get-go. Stay in that place. Appreciate Him for what He's done for you and what He's done for you. Until otherwise, you've been transplanted if He wasn't transplanted. But be very cautious of the source of your life. It's like this light that's on here. This light has a source. That switch is not a source. It's a place that this light is coming from. If you want to get rid of it, you got to go to the source. And our lives got a source. And that source is in God. It's a huge blessing. So when I came to the coffee shop, I couldn't get over it. So I started looking around. And as I went out to eat, the first time in my life in an American restaurant was an Outback restaurant. We walk into Outback. I just got off the plane 2 weeks later, right? We walk in there and they have 15 televisions on the walls. It's television here, television there, television everywhere. And people drinking wine, they're having fun, they're driving cars. There's nobody at the door begging for anything. And I walk in, I'm sitting down, they said, this is the restaurant. I'm checking everybody out. I'm not even hungry, I'm numb. I'm just taking everything in. And the waitress comes to me and she said, what are you going to eat? That was a million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to answer. I haven't answered it yet. And I said, what do you mean what I'm going to eat? She said, well, you got to decide, make a decision. Do I have to make a decision? I said, what I want to eat? What do you have? Because where I come from, we eat what is available. We don't decide. And she said, oh, we have a lot. I said, a lot? Like what? Like how many? She said, oh, maybe 40 or so items on the menu. I said, 40? This morning in this building? Just one building? And she said, yes. And I said, I don't know what I want. So my kids were concerned. Give them a steak. So they brought a steak. I couldn't eat because I'm trying to find out how these people eat with spoons and knife and all these utensils on one table. I'm coming from a place where we needed one bowl, and I'm trying to see if I can adapt to that, so I'm checking everybody out. What's going on? And she comes back, she said, what would you guys like to take for an appetizer? First time I heard the word appetizer. I'm like, what is that? What does that mean? So, oh, here in America, there's something we eat to stir it up. Oh, it didn't happen. And I said, no, I'm not. I don't understand what that is. Give me the real thing. So she brings the food. And then she said, what is that called a drink? I've been sitting down for almost 5 minutes. I'm still making decisions. What do you want to drink? What do you have? She said, we got lemonade, fruit punch. I put two cranberry juice. We have orange juice. Oh, we got. And I said, stop. Do you have water? She said, yes, I have water. I said, give me water. Then she goes, how do you want your water? And then what kind of glass you want to water in? So I'm like, just give me room temperature water. So she brings the water. Later on, before we left, she came back. Are you guys taking dessert? Again, I don't even know what dessert is. I asked my kids what, and she told me. And she goes, we have this, we have that. I said, stop. Where's my food that was here? I know I ate. I want to take my food home. And she goes, oh, I trashed it. I said, oh, hold on. Where is it? So it's in the trash. I said, can I take a look? She says, sure. So she brings it back to the back of the restaurant, and there's this massive dumpster. It's after, 11 o'clock in the morning. And I look into the dumpster, this lettuce tomato is halfway full. And I said, what are you going to do with it here, from here? She said, we're going to trash it. I said, really? You're going to trash it? How often do you do this here? She said, every day, Eric, don't start. I mean, this is just one restaurant. There's thousands of them in this city, in this state, and all over this country. And it just dawned on me that these people have been blessed beyond human understanding. There's so much excess, so much waste. So Eric, you need to start shipping the waste. So I started changing the network, gathering used computers, textbooks, and stuff to Liberia. It's a good side of the story. With all the problems in Liberia, we went back home and we started to build schools for the children. We have built 14 of those schools from 2006 to present. I currently manage 4 out of the 14 schools where the children now have a school to go to. Most of them walk on an average 6 miles a day to get to school. There's no school buses. Now, the ratio between teachers and students in a class is 45 to 1 teacher. That's the ratio. That's a standard ratio, 45 to 1. The textbook we have, the teacher gets to keep the only textbook you have for the entire school. So they draw their notes at home, and then they come to school, and they spend half of the day in the classroom writing on the blackboard, and the kids have to copy the notes off the blackboard into their copy books. So they spend half the time just writing. The teacher makes $100 a month. We have no cafeteria where our kids go to school and have to decide what they want to eat. They don't eat at school. They have no school buses, so they have to walk 6 miles on the average back and forth to school. That's a big problem. But with your help and support and prayers, and with God's provision, we build the schools. And I remember when she came to Liberia a few years ago. I didn't know she came from the villages here, right? So she come over. They came on a water mission project, and they built one of the water pumps at one of the schools. At that time, we had 1,500 kids. And this started very strangely. I'm on a plane coming back to the U.S. and Hope to Liberia, which is the organization she came with. That's the group that Don's brother works with. We're on the plane, and I saw this guy with T-shirts on, Hope to Liberia, and about 25 guys from Indiana, the Hoosier State, they sit in the back. So I walked there and I said, hey, what are you guys up to? What are you doing in Liberia? And oh, we bring the gospel and water for people. I'm like, I have a school, I really need water. At that time, we used to measure the water, how much water to drink. Sometimes when I even take out a bath, you got to use a towel, drop into the water, and just wipe your skin off. Because the water you're going to use to bath, cool, somebody else could drink that water. And I remember Dom's brother coming to the school, did brows, and he's saying, oh, my gosh, we can't do it with hand pump here. It's not going to work. We had to do a complete water system. And on that 10, she was on their flight. They came over, spent 2 weeks. Today, we have clean running water at that campus. But I decided to go back to Africa because all about knowing the purpose why God brought me here. He exposed me to other things they want. Blackness. And as we live our lives, we never going to get out of limbo. We're just going to go from one limbo to another limbo to another limbo. Limbo never ends. We have to stay focused on the bigger picture. So I was in Liberia a few months ago. The last time I was here, I went back home. We still have 3,000 children right now being educated nationwide. We have 200 teachers nationwide. The goal is to totally change the country through education by 2025, county by county. There are only 15 counties in the whole country. We are in 6 right now, so we got 9 more to go. Guess how much it costs to build a school over there? $60,000, $60,000 US. To build a school, 14 classrooms, normally for 1,500 kids, cost $60,000. In America, one of your schools, the cheapest one probably would be $5 million. That's the cheapest. Would be $5 million. And every time I come here, I get a lot of hope from that. The unfortunate thing is that it's hard, so hard to explain to people out here what really is going on. America accounts for 5% of the entire world's population. 5%. It's 350 million people, 330, 350. Out of 7 billion people, but they live the highest living standard ever in human history. Here, everything has hope, including the pets at home. We take them to the vet. They have their own doctors. You know, we take care of them. We do their nails, we do their hair, their food is processed and packaged. There is a cemetery adoption program, there is a daycare for them. You know, that was part of my culture shock. That if we can do all of these things, and these things are happy, why are we not? Why are we? I didn't know anything about depression in spite of everything that I've been through until I came to America. I started hearing about depression. You know, depression was depressed. This was depressed. What is that? You see, hurting people don't worry about other people. Hurting people worry about themselves. Strong people worry about us. And depression comes from just being so self-focused about what it is that you don't have and what it is that you have. I'm here today to tell you that God has been good. Amen. Whether we realize it or not, He's been good. In closing today, I came back. Before I came back from Liberia, I got a call from Louisiana from a school company. I was in Africa. They sent me an email. I said, "Hey, Eric, we got some uniforms we'd like to donate to the children." And I go, "Yeah, how many uniforms you got?" She said, "Oh, we got 400 boxes. 400 boxes of uniform? How did you end up with 400 boxes of uniform?" And she said, "Well, Eric, you have no idea. Our school company served over 50 schools in our district. And these schools would place the order for uniform. We would produce a uniform, and then they come back and say they don't want it because they don't like the logo, they don't like the ear, they don't like the color, they don't like the texture, so we get stuck with 400 boxes, brand new uniforms." What in America? And I said, "So if I don't take the uniforms, what are you going to do with them?" She said, "We're going to take it to the landfill." "To the what? The landfill?" She said, "Yes, we have no choice." And then while talking about that, another lady called me from another county, and she said, "Oh, thank God you are here. You know, we have cleaned up our schools and our White House, the school district White House is filled with stuff. We saw you on TV the other time, and we wanted to call you and tell you that we got a whole White House of stuff to give, to donate to you." And then I go to the White House. Josh, you won't believe. They have cafeteria tables, sinks, they hand up decks, computers, textbooks of all levels of learning from elementary all the way to high school, ready to go to the landfill again. And I said, "So you're going to take this to the landfill?" She said, "Sure. I have 1 week to clear the place up." And then I said, why don't you give this to others? He said, nobody would take them. And then I said, don't you have poor communities around? She said, look, the government makes it so hard, we can't do that. It's like against the law. We had to burn it and give it away. And then a friend came to me and said, Eric, we have problems here in America. You know we have problems. Why should we go to Liberia to go help? We need to build schools for our own children here. And then I said, it's true, you have problems. But it's an American problem. It's a luxury problem. It's a choice problem. And that's a good problem to have. When you can decide what you want, it's a good problem. It means you have too much, you can't decide. But these people we're talking about have no choice. And that's what I believe God called me to take care of. So in that refugee camp, 2002, I don't know God. I'm lying down on the dirt floor, Christians. And this pastor came to the camp early in the morning, 2 a.m., using a bullhorn to preach. There's no church like this. If I had a church like this in Liberia, I'd be top notch, like a bishop in the country. And the president might even be coming to my church. So he started preaching. He said, you know what? Jesus loved you so much that he died for you on the cross. And are you going to keep running away from him? He said, what did you do to save your life out of the war in Liberia? And I couldn't explain. He said, why are your parents not? Everything you ever trusted in your life, everything you ever knew in your life, how's it working out for you? And I couldn't answer the question. He said, what's the United Nations, U.S. government, your own government, your family, your friends, your neighbors? And I couldn't say, I'm lying down in the refugee camp. And he said, when are you going to go back home if you know where you're headed with your life? I couldn't tell. And he said, you know, God has a plan for you. He saved you for a reason. The reason why you have life today is because he got a plan for you. And he's not going to leave you alone until you fulfill that plan. So you believe in what I have said. When you close your eyes, never met that man, never saw him. He prayed for me because I was convicted by what he said. And I became a Christian. I didn't go to church, built no church. Here am I today, standing here, sharing that love of Christ with you. So I came back. We have a container right now in Louisiana. We started loading last week. It's going to leave the U.S. on the 16th of this month. I came with the flight. I'll be driving back with a U-Haul of stuff that I'm taking back, placing the container, and we ship it out to Liberia. And I'm going to go back to Liberia in July for a few weeks before school reopens. Our school runs from September through June, so I have to be there for the reopening of schools. But I say this in closing, that I've come here this morning to tell you the way to finish well is to be a channel. Let it flow through you. Become a vessel that God can use. There's a meaning and a purpose for everything. It's not a how, the what. It's not a competition. It's not the security, the false sense of security in our money, our wealth, in our family, in identity. The real sense of security is in God. Because at the end of the day, that's the person we all want to face. Reagan, been there a long time ago. He was a great, great man. Abraham Lincoln, gone. Hitler, gone. Everybody gone. The only memory we have is the things that they chose to do. How to make the world better or make it worse. And the decision today is ours to make. I said, thank you so, so very much. God is still on the throne. He's still in charge. You may have President Trump here. You may have another president in Liberia and presidents all over the world, but he still can.